This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Wisconsinites head to the polls to make several key primary election decisions in just over a week, and parties are banking on a set of kitchen table issues to motivate the base in each party. But what are those issues and who will actually turn out to vote? Joining us to talk about that is Dan O'Donnell, conservative talk show host from WISN Radio in Milwaukee, and Dave Cheslevich, the former mayor of Madison and blogger, self-described moderate Democrat, right? Thank you both for joining us.
Of course.
Okay, so several big races on that ballot next week, Tuesday, governor, U.S. senator, lieutenant governor, attorney general, some geographical races, Congress and state legislature. What, Dan, let's start with you. What's really at stake here? Is this a big election?
Well, in as much as any election is big, sure, we tend to, in the political world, talk about every race and every election being the most important and most consequential in history, when really it doesn't drive ratings to say, yeah, this is like the fourth or fifth most important election. It is very important. Anytime you're deciding who's representing our state in the U.S. Senate, and even more importantly, who's leading this state? I mean, we're talking about the possibility of changing direction again, moving again towards a more conservative leadership of the state, also the attorney general, secretary of state, state treasurer. Of course, those don't have very many, if any, actual duties. But we're talking about a new direction for the state, potentially, and obviously that's always a big deal.
Do you think there's a lot at stake, more than other primary elections historically?
Well, I don't know if it's more than others, but, you know, it's a midterm. And so the Democrats are the party in power in Washington. We have an unpopular president. And so from a Democratic perspective, it's a question of just how bad it's going to be.
Yeah.
I would say, look, if the Democrats can lose, say, a dozen to two dozen seats in the House, maintain control of the Senate, get Evers reelected, that would be a great night. I'd be pouring champagne if we accomplish that. But it could be much worse.
Primary elections, midterm elections, mixed type of turnout. The last time there was a governor and a U.S. senator on the ballot in Wisconsin, 2018, voter turnout around 23%. Predictions on turnout this time?
I think it's going to be slightly higher, just because I think it's a bit more, you know, visible. And I think, honestly,
there's more money.
There is a lot more money in this. And honestly, what we've seen in my industry and all across news generally is what's been known as the Trump effect. I mean, throughout the Trump presidency, there has been a hyper interest in politics, and that's extended to talk radio, CNN, and cable news, and that sort of thing. And it's also brought about a greater visibility, I think, to politics more generally. That said, it is midterm. It's not a presidential election. So I would imagine turnout to be up slightly, but not a ton over 2018.
Turnout prediction?
I would have agreed with Ann until last week because there was a Democratic primary for U.S. Senate until last week
when all the candidates dropped out
except for Medela Barnes. So I think the turnout on the Democratic side might be lower than you'd expect. But on the Republican side, that's a very hot race between Clayfish and Michaels. And as far as I can tell, it's a dead heat.
Yeah.
And Attorney General, too, should turn out.
Attorney General, yeah, I think there's a lot less focus on that. But that's really overcome by the hyper-focus on the gubernatorial candidates. I mean, Michaels and Clayfish, it's pretty abundantly clear they don't like each other very much. The ads that you're seeing in the Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay markets are just nonstop. They've both gone incredibly negative. Clayfish herself, she's enlisted former Governor Scott Walker. The Club for Growth Action going after Rebecca Clayfish. I mean, this suggests to me, and we just had reporting today, that Tim Michaels is spending an additional $1 million on this race in the last week. I mean, this suggests to me that this is really anybody's race.
And it's Monday, and we still
it's
have
Monday.
More
we've
than
got
a week.
We've got a week and a day. I mean, this thing is probably going to come down to the. I mean, Dave, would it surprise you if we go to recount territory in this thing? It's that close.
Oh, interesting.
It wouldn't. You know, what I think is interesting is that Ramthune might actually be the wild card.
Yeah.
Because if you look at how the votes are coming out, it looks like Clayfish is going to be stronger in the suburbs, Milwaukee suburbs. With Trump's support, it looks like Michaels might do better in the rural areas. Now, Tim Ranthu may only get 2-4%, but he's likely to get that in the rural areas,
yep.
which means it's more likely to come out of Michaels' vote total than Clayfish's. So, you know, when Michaels got in the race and he started spending all this money and he got Trump's endorsement and he got Tommy's endorsement, I thought, well, he's going to win this in a walk.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
it's not looking like that.
No.
Well, and speaking of former President Trump, he's expected to visit Wisconsin later this week on Friday. We heard on some of the Sunday talk shows that potentially on the Clayfish side, there might be a visit from former Vice President Pence and Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz. Do you think that those visits will make a difference between now and next Tuesday?
Not nearly as much as the Trump rally will. I mean, we're going right into Waukesha County, which is allegedly the base of Rebecca Clayfish's support, and I think that's what Michael's intention was. I agree with Dave in that Clayfish's support is going to come from the south suburbs. And what people forget from 2016, Wisconsin was the last never Trump state. Remember, we actually voted for Ted Cruz in the presidential primary. And in the southeastern Wisconsin suburbs, we actually saw significant vote erosion from Trump from 2016 to 2020. Suggesting to me that there might be more people than we think for whom Trump's antics sort of wore thin. So they might be more receptive to a Mike Pence, Ted Cruz endorsed candidate. Like, we just assume that Rebecca Clayfish is going to run similar to Leah Vukmir in the Republican Senate primary in 2018. And this is going to be the same dichotomy with Kevin Nicholson running very, very strong outstate. Rebecca Clayfish, remember, was running essentially unopposed. So she's going to all these Lincoln Day dinners in every corner of the state for 2 years. I actually wonder if Clayfish runs stronger than you would think outstate. And Michaels actually, because of the Trump rally and that, he's not bringing Trump to Mosinee. He's bringing him to Waukesha.
Not as much name
right?
recognition.
You know, and that to me was a big thing. So I just wonder now. Granted, he's probably doing that because there's more people in Waukesha County. You pull from the Milwaukee
bigger
area.
Media market.
Well, it's a bigger media market, and for Trump, he's going to want the biggest crowd size. Well, so.
And is he going to want to travel to northern Wisconsin?
Oh, what? He does often. I'll tell you what, I wonder if Michaels isn't taking quite a risk here by bringing him to Waukesha. He could go to Mosinee and get a big crowd.
Yeah.
But those Republicans in the WOW counties are not necessarily, as you pointed out, Trump Republicans.
Right.
They voted for Ted Cruz last time. So I don't know that bringing Trump to Waukesha necessarily is going to do it. There could be a backlash against it. You obviously know Republican politics better than I do. But my understanding is you do not win a Republican primary if you don't win the WOW counties.
Yeah.
That is...
You know, we're talking a little bit about voter enthusiasm here, and the Marquette poll has been kind of tracking voter enthusiasm among Wisconsinites over time, and there's clearly an advantage for the GOP in early July national poll. That was the last touch with voters before this primary enthusiasm gap, 18 percentage points. And then from May to July, that percentage of Republicans very enthusiastic to vote rose 8%, while enthusiasm rose just 3% for Democrats. So 63% registered Republicans say very enthusiastic to vote compared to 45% of Democrats when we asked just Wisconsin voters, and that was back in June. So a while ago, that gap was 67% of enthusiastic Republicans, 58% of Democrats. I'm assuming you'd say you're not surprised by that enthusiasm gap.
No, I actually am surprised by it because a lot of Democrats were counting on the overturning of Roe v. Wade as lighting a fire under the Democratic base. And I have been surprised that that doesn't appear to be happening, both in national polls and state polls, as you pointed out. Even after the Roe overturn, the enthusiasm gap is in favor of the Republicans. So I am a bit surprised in that.
Are you surprised?
No, not at all. In fact, to your point about Roe v. Wade, what was actually fascinating, do you remember the gubernatorial election in Virginia, November of 2021? They did exit polling on what was the most important issue, and obviously the economy, inflation was just starting to hit 40-year highs and all that. So obviously that was the number one thing. When they asked people if your number one issue was in fact abortion, so abortion's way down, right? Even though the Democratic candidate, Terry McAuliffe, the former governor, even though he's running advertisements specifically hitting Glenn Youngkin on the abortion issue, calling him an abortion extremist, right? He was running TV in the last few weeks of the campaign. Voters who said abortion was their number one issue broke for Youngkin by something like 10 points. I mean, it was amazing. And this, I think, suggests to me that for the people who are really, like, really, really passionate about this, they might be more on the pro-life side than pro-choice, that we might have actually gotten this wrong all along. And also, remember, that decision leaked, what, a month and a half before it finally came out. So maybe that was sort of baked into the cake, so to speak, that voters were sort of seeing the overturning of Roe v. Wade as an inevitability. They had already resigned themselves. And I think, frankly, there's a little bit of Democrat dissatisfaction with the fact that, hey, wait a second, we control the Senate, the House, and the presidency. Why didn't we, if we thought this was coming, do something to codify Roe? Why didn't we do this when Democrats had a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate in 2009? So it doesn't really surprise me. I think, bottom line, what's going to decide this election is how voters feel about the economy, how voters feel about their own personal finances, which is why Democrats are so desperate to change the definition of recession. Because if we're in a recession right now, that's not good for them come November. But so I don't think abortion is that big of an issue for the average voter.
What are the big issues for Democrats then? If it's not abortion, clearly, if they're not motivated.
Well, clearly it's the economy, it's inflation, it's fears about a recession. Right now we have, 3-point-some% unemployment. So, folks are still, employers are still begging for people to come work for them. Wages are still going up, not as fast as prices. But it doesn't look like a recession, I think, from the average person's point of view. It may look like a recession to some economists who are looking at the underlying numbers, and it may be coming. But right now, we're not in a recession, I don't think, or at least people don't feel that. But they're worried about it. And so I think the number one issue is inflation and concerns about what might happen in the economy going forward.
Yeah, for everybody, I think. That's the number one issue. According to the technical definition, yes, I know the Bureau of Economic Research says a year later, we were in a recession. Traditionally, two consecutive quarters of economic contraction as measured by GDP. But I will say, employment is historically high. Yeah. Like, everybody who wants a job has a job. The big problem, even more so than, whether we're in a recession or how deep it's going to be or all this, is that people can't afford the basic necessities. I believe it's something like inflation is costing $5,000 to $6,000 for the average family of four more per year. I mean, this is destroying family budgets. That's a big, big thing. As Dave said, wages just aren't keeping up. They're being swallowed up by the increases in costs. That's what people are concerned about.
The Marquette poll did ask about a variety of issues, and clearly inflation was the number one across the board for Wisconsin voters. This was back in June. 75% said they weren't concerned about inflation. That was up from 69% in April. Again, this is a long time ago when you think about the things that have happened in the economy since then. 58% very concerned about abortion policy. 56% concerned about gun violence. Healthcare, which had been more highly rated in past elections and polls at 47%, and then concern about the pandemic really has reached a pretty all-time low at just 18%. So we've talked about inflation being kind of that number one issue. What are kind of the number two and number three on the Democratic side in terms of issues now?
Well, certainly crime's an issue that Democrats have to deal with. Education's an issue we have to deal with. Democrats have consistently had an edge on the education issue that has gone away in recent polling. I'm hoping to come up with something positive on the Democratic side. Here's one of the problems that my party has. You want to fight races on your ground, on your issues. And right now, there just aren't a lot of those on the economy, inflation, crime, even now education. The Republicans, if you look at the polling data, have advantages. So I think it's important for Democrats, rather than try to invent an issue, to take these issues on, to say, here's what we're doing about inflation. And by the way, gas prices are coming down. That's good. Here's what we're doing. We're taking crime seriously. We're not just going to talk about root causes of crime, because that sounds like you're not taking it seriously. You got to have a sense of urgency about the crime issue. You got to have a sense of urgency, and you got to take seriously concerns parents have about education. Now, you know, critical race theory may be overblown, but look, it's a genuine concern that parents have about what's being taught to their kids in school. Democrats can't just say, "Oh, critical race theory, that's just taught in college. That's just a law school topic." It sounds to voters like we're not taking their concerns seriously, and that's a problem.
Do you think crime and education the next 2 and 3 easily, on the GOP side?
Absolutely, easily, especially in southeast Wisconsin, where we've had crime sort of radiate out of Milwaukee. I mean, we're having smash and grab robberies in Mequon. We're having them at Walmart stores in the south suburbs. I mean, we're having car thefts all over the place. In fact, at the grade school I went to in one of the Milwaukee suburbs last spring, a woman was in line to pick up her children from this grade school, thrown out of the car at gunpoint, and thieves drove off in her car. All right? These are issues that really crystallize for voters when they are perceived as happening to them. Crime, especially for Republican voters in the WOW counties, is sort of seen as a Milwaukee problem. Or maybe in Madison, people in the Madison suburbs say, okay, well, you know, on, you know, downtown Madison, okay, fine, around the Capitol there. But now you're seeing crime affecting everyone. Education is a big issue, and I think the big reason for this, Dave, is it's not just critical race theory or, you know, the teaching of gender identity and all of this to inappropriately young children. It goes into all of this that parents saw when, for the first time, they actually got a look at what was being taught in classes during the virtual lessons of 2020, 2021, post-pandemic. Parents saw, hey, wait a second. We're spending so much time on teaching about social justice. Why are we not focusing on an English lesson? As a result, something like 53-54% of school children in Wisconsin, all grades, are either not grade level in reading and English language arts or math. 53% are not proficient. They're not at their grade level. I mean, that's a big problem. And then parents say, well, wait a second. The teachers are spending valuable class time on what exactly? So that's a big issue. Crime, however, when you live in an area where there is high crime, it's hard to focus on almost anything else.
Let's talk a little bit about that crime. You've had a couple of debates on your show for both Attorney General and the Republican gubernatorial candidates, and clearly it's on the platforms of all of these candidates. The Marquette poll talks about gun violence, not specifically about crime, but people really concerned about that. Combating crime and supporting law enforcement on the platforms of those GOP candidates. The Evers campaign platform talks about investing in local communities and promoting public safety. You mentioned Milwaukee. Total homicides on set to be a record for the third year in a row. Journal Sentinel has been tracking that data. They're on the rise this year. 141 homicides in 2022 so far. That's 43 more homicides than last year at this time. Do you think, Mayor Dave, can I call you Mayor Dave?
I like the sound of that.
Do you think that Democrats want the same solutions for crime? Where's the dividing line on this issue of crime?
You know, I just think that my party sometimes doesn't show the urgency it needs to show on issues like that. We tend to say, well, we want to solve this at the base level, at the root level. We want to get at the root causes of crime, which we usually define as poverty and family breakup and that kind of thing. And that's all well and good. I'm not saying that's wrong. What I am saying is that I think voters, when they hear that, they hear, I'm not really taking that seriously. I don't have the same sense of urgency about this issue that you do. And the thing about crime is that even though it's likely to affect very few of us as individuals, you have this feeling of vulnerability. You have this feeling like, well, it could happen to me. That's why I think it's different from the abortion issue, and I think it's one reason crime is more resonant with people than abortion. I'm pro-choice, but I'm not going to have an abortion. It's more, in my case, a theoretical issue. I think women should have the ability to make that decision for themselves, but that's sort of a theoretical level. crime, you know, I could walk out of the studio and get held up. It's possible. And so I think some of these issues, like crime, like inflation, they're issues people feel. And I think one of the problems with the Democrats is we're sort of talking about things at a theoretical level too often. And we got to hit people more in the gut, more with what they're feeling.
We've been talking a little bit about inflation, the Fed trying to take some action by raising interest rates. The Senate this week supposed to be passing some form of inflation reduction in the U.S. Senate. Is there any potential change that could happen between now and November that would make this a less bad issue for Democrats?
Oh, I can tell you what would make it a more bad issue, and that would be passing the Inflation Reduction Act. Because what we saw actually kick off inflation, it wasn't Putin's price hike or anything like that. We could actually pinpoint it to the $1.9 trillion stimulus that was passed in April of 2021. It was in May that inflation really kicked off. By October, November, we had 40-year highs. If all of a sudden we're going to double down on that by spending more money and increasing taxes across the board. That's the dirty little secret about this. I know Joe Manchin, the West Virginia senator who finally got on board with this, said, oh, we're not raising taxes, we're not raising taxes. It's in the bill. The tax rates at every level are going up. Tiny amount, to be sure, they're going up. Joe Manchin in 2010 said the worst thing you can do is raise taxes in an inflationary environment. If this thing passes, it's a big if, because Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona is still not necessarily.
Yeah.
She is like the ultimate wild card, all right? So we don't know. And they need her, obviously, to get to 50 and to pass by budget reconciliation so Kamala Harris as vice president can cast the tie-breaking vote. I honestly think if they pass this, they're looking at this as, okay, we need Biden needs to get a win. He needs to turn his... I could see this having a boomerang effect and injecting more money into the system, whereas people are paying more money for the cost of government. They have less money to spend. They're going to be saying, hey, wait a second. You raised our taxes. And they're blaming Democrats for inflation. You caused inflation. What's going on here? Right?
What do you think? Could a win in the U.S. Senate be a win for Democrats?
Yeah, I think so. I've been waiting to be able to disagree strongly with Dan on something, and I finally got it.
Yes.
So far, let me start with the inflation issue. The inflation rate in Europe is almost exactly the same as ours. So if it's Biden's fault, how did he make that happen in Europe? As for the stimulus package, I actually thought it was too much. But I think that inflation had a lot more to do with supply chains, overheated demand. You know, people didn't spend money during the pandemic. Now they could. I don't think that $1.9 trillion, while I did think it was too much, had all that much to do with inflation. And I don't think this package will, impact inflation one way or the other much before the election. By the time it gets...
But the optics could send a message.
But I think the optics are good for Democrats. They needed a win. There was this sense, and I was very frustrated as a Democrat, look, we passed an infrastructure package, something that we've been trying to do in this country for a decade or more. That was a great win for Democrats, and it was a bipartisan package, too. We finally did some things on gun control. Didn't go as far as I wanted, but it was a bipartisan package, made some progress. So we did have these wins, but the problem was, because Biden put so much into Build Back Better, and it got so much attention, and then the Democrats just couldn't get over the line. They just couldn't get that one or two more votes. It created this feeling like Biden couldn't get it and the Democrats yeah. couldn't get anything done. So the optics, I think, of just passing anything, for crying out loud, is very good for Democrats.
I will say this. When you're getting to the point where we need to pass something so it looks like we're doing something,
yeah.
it's looking bad. I do disagree, obviously, on inflation. The United States has had the highest increase in its inflation rate out of any developed nation on Earth, easily the highest inflation rate in the G7. In terms of the supply chain issues, a major reason why we have the supply chain issues is people weren't coming back to work because they were getting stimulus checks. They were able to live off of all of the money that government was giving them. In terms of the pure amount of money, what is this one, 700, 800 billion? The fact that we're talking about this as a small amount of money, this won't impact inflation that much after the $1.9 trillion. And then remember, in the early days of COVID, trillions and trillions of dollars being injected into the system. It's almost like, yeah, okay, we're throwing more money on the pile here. in that sense, I think it's entirely possible it doesn't have an effect until later, but it is clearly going to have an effect.
Well, one of the arguments for making it an inflation reduction package, and I love the sound of that, is that we're going to be able to negotiate drug prices. And that, in turn, will result in lower drug costs for Americans. And that's one of the primary arguments. And I think it's a fair argument on behalf of the Democrats.
Okay. Area of disagreement here. I like it. One issue that voters seem to agree on is, you know, concerns about the state of democracy, election integrity. Lots of talk on the GOP side about election integrity. What happened in 2020? Was the election stolen? Democrats talk about gerrymandered maps and a partisan Supreme Court. Is there hope for bipartisanship in Wisconsin, given these major disagreements and divide?
Yeah, I think there's always hope for bipartisanship. There are certain issues that do transcend politics. I mean, look at, as Dave mentioned, in Congress, the gun control. I mean, this was something that was dividing the parties for decades. And finally, okay, we learned that we can meet in the middle. At the state level,
is that harder?
It is harder. I mean, the reality is that if there's a Republican governor, you're going to still have an overwhelmingly Republican state legislature, so there's not as much need for bipartisanship. But I think, obviously, there are always look at the last state budget, for goodness sakes. Governor Evers said he was going to veto it. It was a Republican-drawn budget, and then he ended up signing it with minimal changes. So there's always room for bipartisanship.
I wish I could be as hopeful as Dan. At the national level, there have been some major bipartisan agreements. That's true. At the state level, it's a much tougher situation. They are just dug in. The governor on his side, Voss and LeMahieu on their side. They don't seem to talk much. They don't seem to like each other very much. And as for the budget, it wasn't bipartisan in the sense that Tony Evers sat down with Robin Voss and they traded across the table.
No.
Basically, Voss took Evers' budget, he threw it out, he passed his own, and Evers signed it. And now he's taking credit for it, as I suppose he can, because he did sign it. But that's not bipartisanship the way we think about it. It's not really negotiation and give and take. And I just don't see it happening in Wisconsin. The Republicans have gerrymandered majorities for as far as the eye can see. And if you're never worried about losing your majority, then why work with the other guys?
How big will that election integrity issue be for GOP voters?
It's going to be a big one in the primary, but not as big as I think people think, because the vast majority of voters want to move forward. And we don't want to dwell on 2020 and saying, oh, this was stolen. We're saying, okay, look, we have a Legislative Audit Bureau investigation that said there were laws that frankly weren't followed by the Wisconsin Elections Commission, that we had clerks that were doing things like curing ballots that the legislature did not approve. The Wisconsin Election Commission simply puts out a memo and says, okay, you can do this for the past several years. That doesn't make it lawful. What most Republicans are saying, okay, we understand we need to have our voter rolls cleaned up. We need to get the indefinite confinement where voters can just sort of say whether or not they actually are confined to their homes. All right, we're indefinitely confined. Send me a ballot without me having to show photo ID in perpetuity. These are issues legally that need to be cleaned up. But in terms of issues
like... kind of in the weeds for your average voter.
It is. And that's the thing. So when you say something to the effect of to voters, we will clean up our elections, right? When you are looking backwards and saying, we're going to take back our 10 electoral votes from 2020, people are saying, well, wait a second, we're voting in 2022. What are you talking about? But it is, I mean, this is the Timothy Ramthin supporters. I mean, this is the 3% to 5% of Republican voters for whom reclaiming the 2020 electors is a big issue. But it is just 3 to 5%.
Maybe a partisan primary issue, but maybe not a
general. I couldn't imagine whoever wins the gubernatorial primary, you know, making election integrity like the biggest issue, because the big thing is going to be the economy.
So we're rounding out our time here. What are you going to be watching for on Tuesday night as results come in?
Well, of course, I'll be watching that big Senate primary. And I'm just going to, Dan, I'll give you Steve Alacar in 30 points.
Okay. I wouldn't take that one.
I think the only thing to watch is the Republican gubernatorial primary. I'll tell you, I'm going to give Clay Fish a little bit of an edge. Because
you predict Clay Fish.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that because I think she's going to do better in the wild counties, and you don't win a Republican primary without
points?
Winning there. Oh, a point. One point.
Yeah. What's your prediction?
1 point either way. I honestly don't have a good sense. Up until 2-3 weeks ago, I would have told you Tim Michaels. Right now, I think it's anyone's contest.
Do you have a prediction for attorney general or lieutenant governor?
That's another one. A lieutenant governor, I think Roger Roth, the state senator, has been running the strongest. I'd give a slight edge in the attorney general primary to Eric Toney because his argument is that I'm a prosecutor, Adam Jarko is not. We haven't elected a non-prosecutor as attorney general in this state since the 1960s.
What do you guys do on election night? Are we home with a drink or where are we?
I'm in a radio studio working.
We'll be watching. And you?
I'll be on my computer watching the results come in.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for the lively discussion today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Anytime.
All right. And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we talk to the decision makers and highlight the issues that make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.